Today on Movie Wallers, we continue our coverage of the Tribeca Film Festival 2020. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And ESD as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter. In theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane, if you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello, all.
Just as you started talking, there's a really loud bird.
I can actually hear that coming
can
through.
Can you hear
That's hilarious.
Because for those of you who are listening, Joe and I are not in the same room.
No, we are separated by a door.
Joe, what did you do?
Yeah, this is...
Not the doghouse. It's not the doghouse.
Well, I was going to call it the doghouse, apart from we don't have a dog. But yeah, this is where I get sent when I've been behaving badly. So, here we are again. Lockdown and... I feel like we are emerging from things. We'll have to see how things play out. I think there's a long time before we can actually go to a movie theatre, which is my my dream. I'm still daydreaming about that moment when we can go and get our popcorn and buy our tickets and pay too much for parking and be in spaces with other people.
So actually, I'm not looking forward to being in the cinemas just yet. As much as I love movies and I live for them, I don't know, the idea of being in a room, even with five other people, where the doors are closed and everybody's, you know, in a very systematic fashion inhaling the same air, sort of scares me. So maybe soon.
I'm oscillating. I oscillate between, hey, let's get on a plane, to like, I never want to leave the house again. And I can't decide. And I have moments of both. I have moments of, let's just go and get it done. Like, just go out there and do it and get it, what the heck, to like, we'll never get it, to, oh my God, I am scared to even be in someone else's air in the outside.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny time. I mean, we're having a big debate in our neighborhood right now. I'm on the board of our HOA, and there's this debate between should we close the pool, should we leave it open? The county says we can have it open, but some of us feel like it's not a prudent thing to do. So it's quite a funny place we're in, because they are easing restrictions here in San Diego, just not well. And I think there's a certain amount of COVID-19 fatigue that's set into the world. And so this is the part of the whole journey that I start to worry, that people start getting complacent and not... But anyway, enough COVID-19. The whole purpose of Movie Wallers is to talk about something other than COVID-19. And that's
distract us.
Some of the movies that we've been watching. And that is to say we want to talk a little bit more about the Tribeca Film Festival. So we did a podcast a week or two ago talking about some of the content that Tribeca had released to critics, ourselves included, with a view, I believe, of having the festival at some point later this year. So that is still a TBD, unless, Yazdi, you know something that I don't.
No, that's right.
So as far as this podcast is concerned, these are movies that you may or may not be able to access. Again, like we said last time, if we learn of a way to access any of this content other than by visiting tribecafilm.com, where some of these shorts that we'll mention, you know, were available for a time. As to how long they'll be available, we're not sure. But, you know, the purpose of this really is to let us know, let you know what we've covered as far as the Tribeca 2020 content. And like I say, if there becomes a way that these movies become available via online streaming or via a rescheduled film festival or you know, at a local movie theater when things open up finally, we will do our best to let you know.
And we're happy to say one of them is available on Netflix.
Yes. So let's jump right into that. Yes, so that movie is The Half of It.
Yeah, so The Half of It actually won the audience prize at this year's 2020 Tribeca Film Festival, even though the festival itself didn't happen. The jury did review all the movies and it won the top prize, and it very quickly showed up on Netflix. And essentially, it's your routine three-way romance with a slight twist to it. The movie is written and directed by Alice Wu. And essentially, the tagline for the movie is, agrees to write a love letter for a jock. She doesn't expect to become his friend or to fall for his crush. So this is the old Cyrano de Bergerac story with a little twist to it. It looks very sweet. I must say I'm a fan of the whole string of Netflix movies that have come out with a leading female Asian protagonist. There's been a whole bunch of them, and this seems to be another one in the line. They're cheesy, but they're wonderful. They're just full of the things we need right now. I haven't seen it yet, but the both of you have. Tell us.
So there's a reason, Yazdi, that this won the award. And I urge you, Yazdi, to watch this. This is a Yazdi movie from start to finish. This is a beautiful, sometimes a little chintzy coming-of-age movie that's mostly predictable, but that doesn't take away from the sincerity and sweetness of it. And I think that has a lot to do with the main protagonists. I love this movie.
Joe.
Yeah, I'm surprised, Rashmi. I mean, I think, you know, this kept popping up in our list of streaming movies, and there was a certain resistance to watching it, in the sense of it didn't really do much in the way to sell itself as a piece of entertainment. It's just we knew about the buzz, so the fact that you've responded as well as you have to it is a delight to me. Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. It's a quirky little comedy that intelligently handles its source materials. There are many places where this movie could go wrong, and you know, you look at this type of material, and you know, it could be overly sentimental. It could be overly dramatic. I particularly enjoyed the Ellie Chu character played by, what's her name? I just saw it here. She's the lead protagonist in the movie, Leah Lewis, because she has just a way about her that is very endearing. She's, you know, not your typical kind of, you know,
She's not your
player in a romance
leading lady, right? But she's just got this super sincerity and says so much without saying anything. And I think that's the beauty of this movie, in a sense, is it's not overly, you know, in a kind of John Hughes type of dialogue heavy, it's not heavy in dialogue, but it does what it does so well. And I think it has a lot to say without ramming it down your throat, right? You said, Joe, it could have easily overboard. And there were a few moments where it was going that way, and maybe towards the end, it does overboil a little bit. But again, I think the three leads are so well cast, and it's so endearing, and it just pulls back enough that it keeps your interest to know what will happen in the end.
Okay, I'm dying to see this already.
I just
have to
think
watch
this is like
after.
A Yazdi movie on the can. I mean, yeah. This is a can of Yazdi.
Yeah. If I was going to say that if ever there was a movie that I would define and label as a Yazdi movie, that would be this. It's romantic. It's smart, it's heartfelt, it's funny,
sincere, sweet.
And the other call out for me was Daniel Dima. He has this really unfortunate and difficult role to play in the sense of he has to play unintelligent in many scenes, and do so without coming across as clownish or dorky, and he really nails the tone of that. Like, just right. He's so believable.
He is, yeah. He's almost a bit Michael Cera-esque. But
he lacks that intelligence, or rather the character lacks that intelligence. But the character also brings, you know, almost puppy dog sincerity into the role. And so to me, I think that that's actually quite a difficult thing to do for an actor. So he really made me laugh a lot in the movie. So that's the half of it. The other movie, Rashmi, that I know you saw on through the press only portal, so not currently available on Netflix or other services, but that movie was The State of Texas versus Melissa. So could you tell us about that one?
Yes, I can. So this particular movie, it's a documentary, and it tells the story of the first Black woman to be put on death row under the Texas prison system. And the movie follows her story as her time is coming up to be put on death row, and as she's making one final appeal to try and obviously escape the death sentence. So again, seems like this seems like a very polarizing topic. I know capital punishment is a topic that divides people very easily, and I think bringing it so close to someone who is literally fighting it for life or death, I think is going to be very telling. So again, I haven't seen it, but Rashmi, you have seen it, I believe.
I did, Yazdi, and this one appealed to me. You know, we always say when we get the list, not much to go on, but this topic really appealed to me, and I'm actually surprised it didn't appeal to Joe, because it's about the justice system, but it's about the injustices of the justice system. And I think it's about it basically starts with a video of police film footage with a woman basically confessing to a crime, which is that she killed her 3-year-old child. And that's the starting point. So it grabs you right away. And then it just unravels slowly and takes you back. And where it ends up is somewhere where you don't imagine you're going to end up. And again, it's one of those documentaries that's beautifully put together. It doesn't necessarily talk about the pros and cons of capital punishment per se, but it does, again, like I said, really question the judgment of the justice system and how unjust it can be because of plea deals and bargains and the politics of what's happening at the time, and how this, it's actually the first Hispanic lady, not the first Black lady. But, you know, it just tells of, it sort of delves into so many issues around depression and the class system and poverty and, you know, choices that people make. It's absolutely amazing, and it really got under my skin. And I try to do a search to see if this is available anywhere yet, and it's not on streaming, but I will keep my eye out, and I'm hopeful that this will get picked up and will get distribution. It's a great documentary. So The State of Texas versus Melissa, just amazingly done. And the woman, I have so much empathy for the central character and her journey, and it's just about how some people have a shit life. I mean, it's just, you know, like hurdle after hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. And then you end up losing your 3-year-old child and you end up in jail, in prison, and death row. And really good documentary.
So, Rashmi, one of the movies this reminds me of was one of my highest, I think we picked our top 3 movies last year, 2019 Tribeca Film Festival, and at the top of that top 3 was a movie called The Men Who Kill, which, Rashmi, you had also watched, and it was little vignettes at different stages for women who are on death row at different time points, and that movie just absolutely shattered me.
Yeah, Yazdi, that's a great callback. This is the documentary version of, say, one of those vignettes. And yeah, I keep a lookout for Women Who Kill. Wonderful, wonderful narrative. Just a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Yazdi, while I've been watching all the long ones then, you've been doing a mighty fine job on killing it at the shorts, which I know you love to delve in and out of, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been talking about a few shorts in each of our Tribeca podcasts. But yeah, it was really good. I like the shorts because you're not making a full investment of like a couple hours, and yet even if it's not to your liking, you haven't wasted too much time. But I did not find one that didn't amaze me this year. I mean, it's a particularly well curated list of shorts. So the three I want to bring up in this podcast is one called Awkward Family Photos. And if you remember, about a year ago, somebody started this website where they would post really awkward looking family photos, which just either make you cringe or they make you laugh. And, you know, these are photos that people have posted on social media. And what this team of documentary filmmakers have done is they plan to go and visit the families, you know, of a few of those awkward family photos. And this entire shot is about one family. They took a picture of themselves where it's an Asian family of Chinese descent, and they're all, the husband, the wife, and the daughter are all seated, you know, around this beautiful armchair. And then literally like about 2 feet away is this little stool on which the younger brother is sitting, like he's been punished or so. And it's hilarious. And actually, it's amazing. You find out in the short that how different members of the family even now react to that particular photo. Some of them are defensive. Some of them, the little brother, the little guy who was maybe four years or so has now grown up. And you can see that what was in the picture has borne out even when they're adults. So it's a really fun little short, very, very telling, not something you would expect, you know, based on this premise. And they're going to follow up with a few others. And as you can imagine, it takes a while to track down those families, get their permission, have them speak for the camera and so forth. But I think it's a great idea. The second one that I want to highlight is a movie called Carmentis. Like Carmen, C-A-R-M-E-N, and T-I-S. And Carmentis is a short. It's, I think, about 15 minutes. And the entire short is filmed on a futuristic planet where the spaceship has exploded. And this man he's very, very severely injured. And, you know, he cannot get up because his leg is broken. And his breathing device is going to run out in about 10 minutes. And actually, it's not his breathing device which is going to run out. The planet is going to be covered with toxic gases, and he needs to somehow make his way back to the space, to the station, which he can see in the distance. But he's so badly injured that, you know, he can't even bring himself up, let alone walk that, you know, half a mile to get there. And the entire 15 minutes of the short is about this man trying to will himself to save himself. And it's beautiful. I mean, it uses a sci-fi premise to kind of, you know, think of the most possible extreme version of somebody literally trying to make a life and death situation. So I really liked it.
What always shocks me, Yazdi, about these shorts, and as you described them, they're so well-rounded. And the fact that you can have, and I think I said this in one of the previous podcasts, the fact that you can have a really fleshed out beginning, middle, and end, and feel like you've watched an entire movie in 8 minutes, 12 minutes, 22 minutes is unbelievable to me. Like, that within itself is an incredible talent.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think, you know, just, you know, these are all people who have very little money and they have very little time, and they're trying to somehow present their talent in the hopes that somebody will finance them to make a full feature length movie. So considering that what they achieve with so little, and I think necessity is the mother of invention, you have to make do with little. I mean, this is a very believable environment, and it's set in some future planet, and, you know, he's wearing a space suit and everything, and there's it doesn't seem like it was put together on the backstage of some cinema lot, you know, with a fog machine. It looks really, really believable. So that, right, you know, just the visual part of that is incredible.
Yeah, it's almost like a resume or a calling card in a sense, isn't it? I think these days you almost need to showcase your talent before someone will give you any money at all. So yeah, kudos to all of these very talented filmmakers that, well, first of all, to get anything made, even if it's good or not, is, I think, incredible. Joe, you always say that, you know, sometimes it's easy to talk about these things, but to actually write a screenplay, get it filmed, edit it, get it out, and then to be picked up by a film festival as good as Tribeca. I mean, these are really good. And I agree with you, Yasdi. I probably saw about 10 shorts and I described some of them. I did not see one bad one or even one mediocre one. They were all really good.
Yeah, yeah.
So great job, Tribeca.
Yeah. And then the last one I want to bring up is one I think I had mentioned peripherally in one of the earlier podcasts, but it's called Jack and Joe Don't Want to Die. And, you know, talk about, again, somebody creating a whole new world. I am in the best of times, I'm always attracted to futuristic dystopian settings because, you know, it just exaggerates everything, you know. Like what's going on in a real world right now, exactly. And Justin Kirk, who has been in many, many, many movies over the years, he plays the lead role here. And essentially, he plays kind of a disgruntled, tired, exhausted man in a futuristic world where people have an option of suspending their life. You know, you can go into a state of suspension, hoping that 10 years from now, 20 years from now, life will be better for you and you can bring yourself back out of suspension. And he is tasked with, before he can go home, he's tasked with bringing back this girl who was in suspension and now has opted to come out of it. And, you know, it takes this very unusual premise and just it becomes a two-hander about these two characters, this you know, relatively young girl who's come out of being in sleep for like, you know, 15, 20 years, and this man who wants to have nothing to do with her. He just wants, like, just make your decision. Tell me what you want to do, and so I can go on and get on with my life. And eventually it becomes obvious that he himself is, and it's a bit of a spoiler, but I do want to tell it because it hopefully will make people want to see it. In that, about halfway through the short, you realize that the reason why he wants to go home is because he's had enough of his life and he wants to put himself in suspension. So he just wants to be done with her so he can move on. And it's a great little back and forth between those two characters. Again, just incredible. Just the production design of this whole thing looks so like steampunkish, futuristic, the empty rooms, just the visuals of it is remarkable. So would recommend all three of these movies, Awkward Family Photos, Carmentis, and Jack and Joe Don't Want to Die.
Excellent.
Great.
Yeah.
So I think that wraps up our Tribeca coverage for quarantine 2020, right? So
yeah. Yeah, and hopefully we'll all be able to go to Tribeca in person in some form or the other in the not too distant future.
Yeah, we look forward to it. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of the year plays out as far as film festivals are concerned. I mean, obviously, that's, as we spoke about at the beginning, that's one of the more difficult environments to kind of reboot as we come out of this whole thing. So, you know, things will definitely change for a time, at least until there's a vaccine and everyone's had the vaccine. But nonetheless, you know, I hope that, you know, as we've seen, change is afoot in the movie industry. You know, we're getting some releases straight to streaming. And, you know, these are not, you know, the B and C type things. These are the big Hollywood things that are popping up.
And we're going to talk about those, I think, in our next podcast.
We are indeed. Yeah. So, thank you again, Tribeca. It has been an honor to cover the film festival, as always. We appreciate, you know, your cooperation in letting us see some of these movies, and we hope that this content has been useful to those of you out there, even though, you know, you may not be able to see these movies yet. It does give you a sense for what is potentially available in future. And again, you know, the film festival experience this year was a little muted, but it was more comfortable than I think it's ever been for us. So that aspect of it I've enjoyed.
And Yasti, I think you had one that was at a previous Tribeca that you and I watched the overnight that you wanted to talk about that's on available where?
Oh, yeah. So the overnight is available on Amazon Prime. And gosh, I mean, how much did we love that movie? I mean,
my God, Yasti, I think you and I probably cried with laughter.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a movie to watch with your kids. And
it's fruity.
It's my thing is, it's the kind of movie where it starts off easy enough. It's essentially about two sets of couples who get to know each other through their kids, and they decide to spend, you know, the two couples decide to spend the night together because one couple invites the other for dinner, and they just stay through the night. And the movie just is full of, you're laughing because you're so cringing. You're so
uncomfortable.
You're so uncomfortable. The movie has this amazing ability to make you uncomfortable through its entire duration. And every time you say they're not going to go there, they go there, and then they go one step further. So I would wholeheartedly recommend, not with your kids, but by yourself, to watch The Overnight. It's got remarkable acting, just a tight script, and it's funny as hell.
This is the one with Taylor Schilling, right, from Orange is the New
Correct.
Black. Yes. Correct. So I don't think I saw that at Tribeca with you guys, but I did definitely see that either on, a flight or, you know, something like that.
Or a screener, I think.
Yeah, it was very, very funny.
I think, yeah. I think, Joe, it didn't quite appeal to your humor, right? You found it funny, but not, like, Yasti and I were literally, I think we maybe even peed in our pants a little bit because it was that funny when we watched it.
Well, yes. But
we did watch it with a live audience, and it was, like, it's probably one of the funniest films I've seen.
It's
and
very darkly comical.
Jason Schwartzman in it,
and Adam Scott.
Yeah, and I think the thing for me is always Jason Schwartzman. He's able to pull off crazy so convincingly, and Adam Scott plays uncomfortable so incredibly well. It's just the perfect casting.
And if anybody who thought that Taylor Schilling was just a flash in the pan with Orange is the New Black, just her timing here with the comedy is just brilliant. I mean, she's not a one-hit wonder. She knows what she's doing. She's just remarkable here.
Yeah. So
overnight.
There you go. The Overnight, available on Amazon Prime streaming. And it's one that Yasti and I had watched maybe 3 years ago, four years ago at Tribeca Film Festival. So they do make their way to the screen eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this one, it's like if Yorgos Lanthimos was to direct a comedy, we might get something this.
Joe, it's not that bad. Don't say that. It's way more accessible.
Yeah, it's very accessible. Yeah.
But
talking of which, Yorgos Lanthimos, Yasti, thank you for the update. Yasti made my day on Thursday when he told me that Yorgos Lanthimos is putting out a new movie.
Yes, he is, and
it's coming,
yeah, and it's by the same person who wrote
The Favorite.
Yeah, so I think personally, left to his own devices, Yorgos Lanthimos can get very dark and very weird, but I think when he's adapting somebody else's work, then it's just the right balance of being accessible and still being weird, strange. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
It gives him some parameters, some constraints. Right. Cool. All right. Well, let's draw this one to an end. Thank you again for listening. Thank you again, Tribeca. We do hope that these movies will make their way out into the world in due course. So thank you for listening through the podcast, and we hope that you have enjoyed our coverage of Tribeca 2020. Until next time, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.